The Orange FM.
Ready to form Voltron. Activate interlocks. Dinotherms connected. Impracel up. Mega thrusters are go.
Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and I'm here this week, and we're going to be doing another episode review. So we have four episodes lined up, and we're going to review them, and we have a couple of things to talk about before them, but before we talk about those, I want to bring back the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Jolly.
Wait, who are you talking about?
How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for helping us with these episodes reviews. We're getting a lot of good feedback about these. A lot of people are liking these, and they keep on saying, make sure you keep on doing that you know, comparison between Go Lion and the regular Voltron episode, because they love that.
Oh, I'm glad, because I was really afraid last time I was here. I was way too much of a smartass.
I don't think so.
All right, good. Okay.
All right, so anything new going on in your professional career since we last talked?
Well, I've slept since I was here last, so I don't remember what I said last time. let's see, I have pretty much wound up working on Dying Light, the video game coming out at the end of January. The Terminator miniseries, the comic book miniseries that I have going with Dark Horse, the last issue of that just came out, so the trade paperback should be coming out, I would say, in another 6 weeks or 2 months or so.
Does that mean we can get the whole thing all in one?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, although you shouldn't wait until then. You should go and buy all six individual issues.
Obviously, yeah.
I just got another video game job, but I can't talk about that because... why would I be able to talk about that? that would be fun and informative, but no, I'm a freelancer, and at any given time, like 85-90% of what I'm doing, I can't tell anybody about.
Right.
I can say that working on Dying Light, I needed to learn some Polish because I wound up spending some time in Poland.
Right.
And the only thing I can say about this is that I am now learning French.
You're going to be quite the world traveler by the time you're done all these video games.
At some point, I would like to be sent to a country where English is the native, like the official language. You know, like England
or Australia.
You know,
Canada,
Scotland. Well, no, I have been to Canada.
Okay,
I have been to Canada, but then there are also parts of Canada where they, even though they can speak English, they don't want to.
Okay. All right.
Well, it's funny because sometimes you get up into Quebec and you get somebody who speaks English but with a very pronounced Quebecois accent.
Right.
And then sometimes you get people who are speaking French, and then you say something in English and they talk to you just like they're from like Cincinnati or something. Like no accent at all.
You know? Okay.
I'm not well versed enough in my Canadian cultural lore to know why that is.
Anything else that you want to talk about?
I'm really enjoying Sleepy Hollow.
Is this the second season or the third?
This is the second season.
Second season, that's right, because my wife watches that one too, and I know we still have the Headless Horseman around, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, he's very slightly less headless.
Oh, he's got a head now?
Every now and then.
Oh.
Sometimes he has a head, yeah, and a wig.
Wow. But you're enjoying it, huh?
I am. I've heard it described as like completely bug nuts insane, but in the best kind of way. And I can't help but agree.
Okay, cool.
And Nicole Beharie kicks all of the ass. She's awesome.
Okay. I guess the one thing that I'm happy about, in fact, is that Star Wars Rebels has come out now officially. And we saw the first episode last week.
I have not seen that.
Yeah.
I'm very hesitant about Star Wars stuff.
So I enjoy that.
Okay. Well, on your recommendation, then I'll check it out.
Okay. It's on Disney XD Monday nights at 9 o'clock.
All right.
But before we do these episode reviews, I just want to mention the fact that we were in New York Comic Con. We had a Voltron panel there. It was the 30th anniversary Voltron panel by Perfect Square, who was the publisher that made the book Voltron from Days of Long Ago, a 30th anniversary celebration. And for the first time, people were actually able to buy the book that weekend. And we talked about it at the panel. And the books that were available were special edition books. They were very limited edition of 200. They had silver lining around the pages and a special slip cover. The regular book does not have a slip cover and it does not have silver around the pages. So anybody who bought a book at New York Comic Con has a limited edition number, whatever number out of 200.
Now, I didn't get the chance to go to this year's New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten my hands on a copy of this book yet.
Right.
But the most important question I have about it, am I in it?
Well, there were mentions about the comic books that were made over the years and the publishers.
So the real answer is no, Dan. You're not in the book. Get over yourself.
I will let you see for yourself, but there were mentions of the Devil's Due Publishing comic books, the Dynamite comic books, and you know all the comic books that came out over the years, and then also the three television series, and you know various things that the Voltron was a part of over the last 30 years. Also, there was the whole fiction section that was written by Brian Smith that you know covers all the information about all the characters, you know, their backgrounds. It covers also the Drools and those characters, and all there's a Robies catalog in there that it's like baseball cards for Robies. It's really cool.
I'll be buying a copy whether I'm in it or not.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And then of course the comic book at the end that sort of concludes the second season of Voltron Force. So we want everyone to know that it's available this coming Tuesday, October 28th, and it's available on all formats. So you can get it on Kindle or ebook or hardback or, you know, whichever format you prefer. While we were at the panel at New York Comic Con, they were giving out to everyone that came into the panel a special, what they call the 30th Anniversary Fan Club. It was just a card that has printed on it some of the stuff that the fan club members back in 84, 85 got. And I just wanted to read a little thing that came with the letter that was sent with it. It has a black and white picture of Voltron and the Voltron Force members. It says, "We send you greetings from the Galaxy Garrison headquarters for all of us in the Galaxy Alliance. We are so glad that you have joined us. Being a Team Force member is a very important job. We all have a Team Force mission. Your mission is to keep your home, family, friends, and neighborhood happy and safe. This kit will tell you many secrets on how you can become a good defender of your universe. And there are fun things to do, too. Because you're now a member of the Voltron Team Force, we will send you a special letter just for Team Force members. It's called Team Force Tales. It will tell you about the exciting things we and kids like you are doing to defend the universe. Maybe we'll even write about you. Just let Voltron know how you are working to help him with the Team Force mission at home. It tells you an address to write to, and then it says, now that you're a member of the Voltron Team Force, be sure to join our adventures every day on your local TV station. We'll be looking for all of our members. Let's go, Voltron Team Force." So it has a card with a key on it that says official member of the Voltron Team Force. And on the back it says, "I, Commander Keith, do hereby declare your name as a member of the Voltron Team Force." So that was a pretty nice thing they were giving out. And then we also had book signings at the Viz Media booth, one on Friday and one on Sunday. And we also had a couple interviews, one we did with Twitch TV. and one we did with Geekcast, another podcast. So that was pretty cool. Let's get right into these episode reviews. What do you say, Dan?
Let's do it.
And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Our first episode, number 13. The Golion name is called Introducing Beautiful Hinerva, and the Voltron Defender of the Universe title is called The Witch Gets a Facelift. So when we begin the episode, it's night on Eris, and Hagar lands in a coffin ship in the woods. The scene switches to the next day at the Castle of Lions. Hagar asks her cat how they're going to sneak into the castle. Well, they watch a falcon fly into one of the openings high up in the castle wall. Hunk tries to catch it, but Pidge says, let me handle the animals. What do you say? And then Pidge whistles for it, and the bird lands on his arm. And then Keith notices there's a message attached to the leg. Now, at any time here, Dan, if you feel like there's a change that we need to talk about with Golion or anything, feel free to go ahead. But I think this one pretty much covers the same exact stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. There's a little bit later on involving some handwriting that is only in the Voltron episode. And not surprisingly, some of the violence gets toned down from Golion to Voltron. But yeah, this is a surprisingly faithful episode.
Right. So it was nice to see that they were able to make full use of a few episodes here.
Mm-hmm.
So the next scene shows the princess running through the castle with Nanny calling after her, and the princess is wearing only a towel. So Nanny yells at the rest of the force because they're gawking at her in her towel, and she tells Karan that she was just taking a bath and she wants to know, you know, what's going on. Well, she sees the falcon, and Karan tells her that the falcon brought good news. In the Golion version, he tells the story of Queen Elena, who went to get married at Castle Treby 15 years before the Castle Altia fell.
And yeah, those are pretty much, they're basically the same. Allura's aunt went to get married and has not been heard from since then.
Right.
I think there's a little bit maybe more emphasis on everyone thinking she was dead.
Exactly. Exactly,
And one little bit of characterization that I missed from the Golion episode is when Allura comes running in her towel, she looks at rival Karan and says, "You shouldn't summon me so abruptly like that." And you know, it made me think that the way he said, "Princess, you've got to get in here right now," that she thought there was some sort of emergency.
Right.
Like, you know, the castle being attacked or something.
But it was actually good news.
It was good news, yeah. But in the Voltron episode, it made her look like impulsive and I guess maybe irresponsible.
Right.
Like she's too scatterbrained to know to put on some clothes when she's getting out of the bath. Of course, the first...
It makes for good drama in the episode, doesn't it?
Well, I think the theme of these first two episodes is casual sexism. and the crew of 14-year-old boys that laugh at her when she's standing there.
Right. Well, you kind of get that sense when they start the camera angle at towards her feet, and then they go up, you know, completely to her head.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing nothing but a towel. So I kind of get the sense that the Japanese animators wanted to say, hey, look, we have women in our episodes too, and look, they look pretty good.
Yeah, they're not so good on the decision-making, you know, and they're kind of irresponsible, but yes, they are good to look at.
Yeah. So you were right about the letter, the message. When Karan shows it to Princess Allura, He wants her to verify the handwriting to determine if it's really her, because they're, you know, they're very skeptical and they're very, you know, safe and not so sure about, you know, she hasn't been around for a while. And we don't know if it's really her. And, you know, Zarkon's always got something going on and Hagar, you know, so they just want to be careful about it. So when she sees the handwriting, she's sure that it's her aunt.
Yeah, and the handwriting isn't even a thing in the Golion episode, because she thought her aunt was dead, and just this message coming in is good enough for her.
Right.
She just says, "Oh, you know, oh crap, my aunt is alive, and she's coming here."
And her aunt is her only surviving blood relative.
Right.
Right. So she says she's coming in a horse-drawn coach, and Princess Allura wants to run out to greet her. What we see next is the horse-drawn coach, but something happens. The horse-drawn coach is stopped by Hagar. The guards attack, but she disables them all. Well, and I'm sure in the Golion version there were a couple more that probably got killed and they just didn't show it, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly the same with the first guy that she zaps, and he just kind of gets knocked around, and you get the idea that he might just sort of get knocked senseless.
Right.
The second two guys get burned to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately for them.
Yeah, we can't show that. All right, so what happens is that, I guess her name is Aunt Orla, right?
Yeah,
in the Voltron version, it's Elena in the Golion version.
Yeah, and she is a queen, so they often call her Queen Orla.
She faints in front of her handmaidens, right?
Yeah,
and Hagar figures out that she can use Princess Allura's aunt as her way to get into the castle. She performs a spell that exchanges her form for Queen Orla's.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly the same in both versions of the episode, is the switching of identities.
Right. So in the next scene, Princess and the others are running through the forest and they find her unconscious on the ground. And this her is now Hagar pretending to be Queen Orla.
Right.
The princess tries to wake her. She wakes up and says she missed the princess, and princess notices her body feels like ice, and Queen Orla just claims that she's tired from the journey. Right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's not too much discussion of what happens to the rest of her party.
Right.
And why she's just kind of lying there face down on the ground in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And there's even less discussion of that in the Golion episode. And it's like it's at this point where I don't know, I guess maybe Queen Orla is so gorgeous everyone's IQ drops like 60 points.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because the logic here begins to take some hits as the episode progresses.
Right. So they get her to the castle, and Nanny's excited because she helped raise Queen Orla. And as soon as Hagar sees the mice, she can't stand them. And the princess ends up telling the mice to go somewhere else, and the mice don't seem too pleased about it.
Yeah, and they make a good point in the Golion episode, because someone says concerning the mice, oh yeah, Hagar, the witch, can't stand mice. That's why she always travels with her cat, Yaga.
Yeah.
Yeah, like actually mentioning Hagar by name that early on.
Right. So they're in the princess's room, and I guess it's one of the guest rooms. But while the princess tries to find a dress for her aunt, Hagar is sneaking up behind her, and it appears to strangle her.
Yeah.
Well, the mice show up again. And then she screams to make the mice leave. And of course, the mice don't want to go because they saw her aunt motioning to strangle the princess. And when they tell Princess Allura about it, she doesn't believe them.
Yeah. I found myself getting quite frustrated with our favorite princess here over the course of this episode.
This is a definite red flag. If the mice have always been honest with her, mm-hmm. you know, why would they lie about this?
Right. Yeah. And as we'll see pretty shortly, that complete denial just keeps going.
Yeah. Well, her aunt says she needs rest and gets in bed. And while she's in bed, Hagar contacts her cat and tells the cat that there are tasty mice in the castle.
Yep, exactly the same in the Go Lion episode.
She definitely wants the cat to eat the mice.
Mm-hmm.
So the cat is able to slip past the guards pretty easily and get into the castle, and then ends up chasing one of the mice into a mouse hole. And Pidge comes around the corner and he sees the cat at the mouse hole, and he knows it's Hagar's cat right away.
Yep.
So he tells the other guys he saw Hagar's cat. And then Keith reports to Karan while the others look for the cat. And Karan tells Keith that he sensed that there was no kindness in the queen. And the cat suggests that there's something definitely awry here.
Yes, it happens pretty much the same way in the Go Lion. The line about kindness isn't there, but Karan basically, he treats what they're saying seriously. He's just saying, well, you know, this is some serious stuff you're talking about here. We need to be sure.
Right. So, of course, they confront the princess with this, that the cat's there in the castle.
My aunt is Hagar the Witch? Karan, that's ridiculous. I certainly should know my own aunt. You're beginning to see enemies in every shadow. I just can't believe you'd bring me a malicious rumor like that.
Princess, I beg you to be extremely cautious. You could be in real big trouble.
I've heard enough. Aunt Orla is not a witch.
Isn't the queen beautiful?
What she looks radiant.
As beautiful as ever.
Evil-looking witch, isn't she?
Hunk ends up finding the cat after it jumps on top of him. And they all, of course, agree, yep, that was Hagar's cat. And they agree that they have to get that cat. Pidge gets an idea that he can use the mice as bait.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to talk to the mice. And here's a part where I think there might be just a little bit of a difference between what he says to the mice in whether you're talking about Voltron or Golion. What does he say to the mice in Golion?
Well, they get called by their names a lot more. At least the two adults do, because it's basically a husband and wife mouse and their two little mousy offspring.
Yeah, we're learning a lot more about these mice as we go along.
Yeah, and the mice's names are Platt and Chuchule. And Platt is the male. And Pidge actually says, you're the father of a family here. It's your responsibility to protect your family. And you can do that by being brave and acting like bait so we can catch this cat. And Platt's like, yep, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, and in Voltron, he's just basically saying to them, look, we need your help in order to lure out the cat, and are you guys willing to do this for us?
Right.
So what they end up doing is to make this even more hilarious, they oil the floor to make it really slippery. And as the mouse goes out on the floor to act as bait, the cat chases it. And then everybody's slipping on the floor until Keith ropes the cat around its neck.
Yeah.
Well, Hagar senses something is wrong as soon as that happens. And she, acting as the queen, is at the dinner. And she ends up putting poison into the bowl at dinner, thinking that the princess or others are going to drink it.
Well, it's not poison in the Voltron episode. It's a sleeping pill, or sleeping potion.
Right.
Where, not surprisingly, in Go Lion, it is poison, and she intends to kill everyone.
Yeah. So, at dinner, the mouse goes after the queen and bites her on the hand.
Right.
And the princess thinks this is just outrageous. And Keith says, well, don't be fooled, princess. That's Hagar. And the cat is, you know, her cat. At that point, Hagar realizes the jig is up and she reveals herself. A couple of them go after her, try to capture her, and she jumps out of the way to evade capture.
There's a little bit with that poison punch because I think Keith threatens to see if the cat will drink it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what really got her to reveal herself.
Except in Golion, he says, fine, I'll pour it on the cat.
Right.
We'll see what happens then.
Right, and Hagar ends up knocking the bowl out of Keith's hands.
Mm-hmm, with a chair.
Right. Right, so after she grabs Nanny, she says, let go of my cat, and, you know, nobody will get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith tells Hunk to let the cat go. So they let the cat go, and of course the cat goes after Hunk again. But so they release the cat, and Hagar fires a shot from her staff at Lance and Hunk, and they just barely misses it as they dodge it. She ends up spinning around like a tornado, tries to make a chandelier fall on Pidge, and she snares Keith and Lance in a net that comes from her hand. At that point, the eyes of King Alfor light up on the wall, and it breaks Hagar's spell that Keith and Lance have trapped.
Man, I saw that, and I was thinking, I'm really looking forward to seeing what actually happened there in the Golion episode, because that's a massive deus ex machina. You know, that's like, surely they're not going to be saved by the spirit of King Alfor out of nowhere. And then I watched the Golion episode, and they were saved by the spirit of King Alfor out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I love this show, and I do poke a lot of fun at it, but that's one thing where I would really like to have been in the writer's room at that point. And, you know, when that was pitched, I just wanted to be like, really, really? If King Alfor could save them all, why did he wait until now?
Exactly. And it didn't seem at that point to be such a dire situation that he needed to jump in at that point, right?
You know, if Alfor is hiding out in his painting up there, just waiting to pitch in, you know, maybe he could have kept Keith from getting, or Sven from getting killed.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Way to go, Dad.
But that all happened outside.
Well, yes.
So at this point, you know, Hagar's trying to escape. She takes out two guards and she flies out of the castle. And the team go to their lions. The princess gets in Blue Lion. She gets there first and chases her and says, you're going to pay for pulling the wool over my eyes or for fooling me. And then all of a sudden, out of the ground emerges a giant roe beast. It knocks Blue Lion into the water and chases into it after her. And the other lions follow and go into the water to help. While they're underwater, the roe beast seems to be getting the better hand. So they all get out of the water and form Voltron. And then pretty soon after they form Voltron, they form Blazing Sword, two slices through, and this roe beast is history. And Hagar takes off in her coffin ship.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, that roe beast was given back pretty well as good as he got. Plus, if you pause it and look just at his face, he looks like the Grinch.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, but I mean, it was one of the quicker, you know, battles.
Right.
And then the princess ends up finding her real aunt, and then she ends up showing her the castle and the team are talking about the heroism of the mice. So that's the end of that episode. That was pretty much it.
And, you know, I was expecting there to be some harsh words spoken by someone to Allura for, like, blindly insisting that there's nothing wrong. But no, they're just all really happy with the mice.
I think they were happier for the princess that her real aunt was alive and they found her.
Yeah, and that's another difference, because in Voltron, Hagar says, when Allura asks her where her aunt is, Hagar says, she's safe enough.
Yeah.
And in Golion, Hernerva says something to the effect of, don't try to stop me or you'll never see your aunt alive again. Words to that effect. It was very clear that she intended Elena to die.
Right.
But, you know, again, not surprising.
All right, well, let's move on to episode 14.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
In Voltron, episode 14 is called Urak Gets His Pink Slip. And in the Golion version is called The Crown Prince of Hell. So here we are. There's a lightning storm as Urak's fleet is about to attack Aris. And the lions are ready for the attack force this time. Keith makes sure the team is ready. He launches rockets at the ships in Urak's fleet. While the rockets take out the small fighters, they do no real damage to the bigger ships. Urak answers with a larger laser barrage. The lions fly in and attack each individual ship. Black Lion uses a mouth sword attack, cutting holes in one of the bigger ships. Then Red Lion uses a mouth sword attack on the smaller ships. Allura fires Blue Claw's missiles at some ships, blowing them up. Then she slams right through a ship with her mouth sword. Urak sends another laser barrage at the lions, knocking down Yellow Lion, then Blue Lion. Keith has a surprise for Urak. This is a pretty, you know, pretty big battle right off the bat in this episode, and the team is in a position where they were rarely in before, where they were ready for this one. What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, this is another instance of wondering what the original intent was, because Urak comes in and he says, attention all combatants, we are the largest fighting force ever assembled. We're going to go and destroy planet Eris. Your mission is to destroy everything on the planet's surface. And I was watching it thinking, you got like two dozen ships there, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know that's the biggest fighting force ever assembled.
Yeah.
And watching the Golion version, It's really more that Urak has been defeated by Voltron so many times, and he's just so humiliated by the experience that he's trying one more time. He really wants to come in here and get a win. But like you commented, the lions are there waiting for him, and Urak himself actually says, "Hey, no fair ambushing us.
Yeah.
You were lying in wait. That's not fighting fair."
Right. And when I said Keith has a surprise for Urak, this is a surprise to all of us.
Yeah. And he doesn't word it quite like that. He activates that. I think he calls it the black beam.
Yeah, it's a burst of white energy that fires from Black Lion's chest plate.
Yeah, and he activates it like any other weapon that he would have been using. So, you know, it's just standard. But does the job.
Yeah.
Takes out your ex-ship.
It hits the command ship right in the nose, a direct hit. Mm-hmm. And the whole front section of the ship falls off and explodes. Now, with his fleet damaged and much smaller, Urak retreats to Planet Doom. And they never even needed to form Voltron. So, all the team has their own way of telling Urak who's boss. Which is kind of nice. Even the princess got involved in it, and she was a little blushing that she even got involved in that.
Oh yeah, like she was basically, I forget what the language rating is on this show.
It's for kids.
It is for kids. So I can't really say what she was doing. She was talking in an unflattering way, about Urak.
Yeah, I mean,
she was talking crap.
Yeah, she was trash talking him like a like a fantasy football participant would.
Run to Zarkon, Urak.
No points for Urak today.
Just come back here again, and we'll send you home piece by piece.
Oh dear, did I say that?
So the scene changes to Doom. And on Doom, Urak reports to the Drool governors on why his attack was a failure and begs for their forgiveness. Zarkon and Hagar appear and sit at his throne. Zarkon remarks on how this is not the first defeat Urak has had at the hands of the Voltron Force. And Hagar tells Urak that Zarkon won't accept failure anymore. His proper punishment will be banishment from planet Doom. Well, Urak claims he's been faithful and begs them to reconsider. Zarkon calls him a stupid fool, and there's no place on Doom for bumbling idiots. And as Urak begs for mercy, and they're about to kick him out, a fleet of space cruisers arrives on Doom, unexpected. It is Zarkon's son, Prince Lotor, returning from his conquests. So here's our first view of Prince Lotor.
Well, backing up a little bit, I bet you can guess what they're actually threatening Urak with in the Go Lion episode.
Death?
Yeah. In fact, they're very strongly implying that he would do best if he just killed himself.
Wow.
Although, when you see that orange chick in the sort of teal-colored singlet there whipping him.
Wow.
The line of dialogue, I think it's from Zarkon or Daibazal, is "Die, Sadak."
Wow.
So there's no question of Urak making it out of even the throne room alive until Lotor shows up.
Yeah, and you know, if this was Vader, he would just crush his neck.
Right.
Just right then and there. So it just, I think it just goes to show that Zarkon is a little bit too lenient, you know. Anyway. So Prince Lotor comes in and he kneels before his father and into his father's welcome embrace. Lotor recounts his victories to bring back ships full of riches and slaves, and the governors all cheer for Lotor.
Yeah, when I was writing the comics, the Devil's Due comics,
yeah,
when it came time to design Lotor, I liked the way Lotor looked. I liked his designs. And in here, in these episodes, it becomes really clear. Lotor is like head and shoulders taller than Keith.
Yeah.
And Zarkon is head and shoulders taller than Lotor.
Yeah.
You know, I love it that Zarkon is just this colossal creature. But I told the Devil's Due guys that, I was thinking of modeling Lotor after Adam Copeland. The professional wrestler goes by the name Edge.
I'm not familiar with that one. I'm sorry.
Well, he's this really tall, lean guy. And he's got kind of a long face and this big, powerful jaw.
Okay.
And he usually has long hair. But he's, I don't know exactly how tall he is. He looks like he's about 6'4", 6'5". And he's muscular, but he's really, really lean. Like he presents kind of the sort of relatively narrow, lean profile.
Okay.
And nobody at Devil's Due knew anything about professional wrestling. And they came back and said, "Professional wrestler? No. He can't be some giant, roided out Hulk looking guy." And I tried to say, "Guys, it's Adam Copeland. It's, you know what? Fine." Just have I think it was Tim Seeley doing the designs at the time. I said, have Tim come up with something. just a little aside on how Lotor got the way he is or didn't get the way he was in the Devil's Due comics.
Okay. Well, at this point, Lotor tells his father he heard on his travels distressing rumors about Planet Doom. And Zarkon is like, "What rumors?" Lotor says there's been many defeats by the super robot Voltron.
"Knowing that you can be defeated by these space explorers and a mere robot brings you great shame. and gives hope to your enemies throughout the galaxy.
So Zarkon blames it on Urak's incompetent leadership. Lotor suggests that Urak could still be used to serve Planet Doom. He asks Urak if he wants a chance to redeem himself, and Urak says he will do anything to avoid banishment. Zarkon
the scene takes on a definitely different cast. And I don't mean like cast of characters. I mean, it feels different in the Golion episode, because as soon as Lotor shows up, he says, hey, and I'm paraphrasing here. He says, hey, Dad, I brought you a present. And he's got these four soldiers carrying a table. And on the table are 8 or 9 severed heads. And these are all, they look like they could be different subjects of the Drool Empire. Is the skin tone is like blue and green.
Uh-huh.
But Lotor, or in the Golion, he's called Sinclein, has been on a very specific mission. He's been at a place, he's been clearing out and conquering a place called the Goering Nebula.
Goering Nebula.
The Goering Nebula. Goering, spelled exactly this way. You know, Hermann Goering was Adolf Hitler's number two guy.
Oh, wow.
And that and Sinclein, I often wonder how Japanese shows choose the English words and the just the non-Japanese names, because, you know, did they just hear the word Goering somewhere and decide that sounded kind of good? Or more likely, did they know exactly who Hermann Goering was? And that really makes you wonder what the people in the Goering Nebula are like.
Wow.
But on a slightly more puzzling note, the name Sinclein, when I first read that, I used to run a company that put together study guides for university students, and my knowledge base is like really broad and really shallow, but Sinclein, spelled with a Y, S-Y-N-C-L-I-N-E, is a geology term.
Okay.
There are synclines and anticlines, and it involves the folding of the crust of the Earth. If there's tectonic activity and the Earth basically gets smooshed together and folds and turns into waves, and the syncline is the lower part of the wave.
Ah, okay.
And of course, that has absolutely nothing to do with the Imperial Prince here.
Right.
But I've always wondered how they decided to name him something that I really have a hard time thinking would ever come up outside of a geology discussion.
Yeah.
Anyway, much less dire than the severed heads of the Goering Nebula.
Yeah.
but you know, in the Voltron episode, Lotor says, no, Urak's okay. I can use him. We can defeat Voltron.
Well, without saying it outright, he's basically saying Urak will either become a goat or a hero. All right.
Right. But Prince Sinclein makes it much less ambiguous, because he basically says, oh, you're going to die, but you can do it in a better way if you come with me.
You can do it with honor.
Yeah, and Sadok, the, you know, Urak in the Golion episode, I don't think he has any doubt as to what's going to happen. So he basically says, oh, yeah, I can die in a better way. I'm your man.
Zarkon declares to all of his warrior chiefs that Prince Lotor is the new commander-in-chief and will lead the Drool forces to victory over planet Eris. On Eris, Pidge is teaching the space mice to walk on their hands and do other tricks, and he wants to be their agent for shows around the galaxy. In a small town on Eris, people are outside thinking they're safe, but an enemy spacecraft appears in the sky and starts firing on the land and destroying buildings.
What's going on, Keith?
Attack! It's only one spacecraft.
Hmm.
Crown Prince Lotor, son of King Zarkon, the ruler of Planet Doom. I come to tell you, your planet has only one chance to escape destruction. And who are you, my pretty?
I am Princess Allura, and I order you to leave Planet Eris.
What? She gives me orders? Well, pretty or not, no one tells me what to do. I have an offer to stop all fighting, to establish peace and cooperation between our planets.
I don't trust him.
I ask that one of the Voltron Force fight me, man to man.
All you gotta do is come down here and we'll see who's toughest.
If your man can prove his strength over me, King Zarkon will allow you to live in peace forever. Believe me, Princess, on my oath as a Crown Prince, I speak the truth.
It's gotta be a dirty trick.
Go home!
Are the Voltron Force all cowards? Isn't there a brave one among you?
Okay, I'll take your offer.
No! We'll see who's a coward!
Oh? What do I call you?
I'm Keith!
Very well. Meet me at once in Devil's Canyon and come by yourself.
Keith, it's some kind of a trap.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
He's Zarkon's son.
I know, but I think it's worth the risk. If there's any chance of making permanent peace, I have to try, no matter what.
And on Doom, Zarkon is perplexed why his son would go to Eris all by himself, why he wants Urak, and why he consulted with Hagar. He asks Hagar, what's he up to? Is my son just an idle braggart? And Hagar tells him, no, I have used my magic to turn Urak into a giant monster. And Lotor has a plan to separate the Voltron Force members so they can't form Voltron. Then he'll release Urak to destroy the planet. Zarkon is pleased by his son's truly evil plan. Is there anything different in there with Golion?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Okay. Well, Keith ends up going out to Devil's Canyon on horseback to meet Lotor. And Lotor says, may the best man win. And they both take out their swords and they start sword fighting. And as Keith gets closer to the ledge of a cliff, Lotor thinks he has the upper hand, but Keith disarms him. Lotor then reaches for a rock and hits Keith on the head, knocking him down the cliff. And as Keith lies motionless on the rocks below, Lotor says this was only a duel to separate the force and lower the planet's defenses. Now everyone will be destroyed. The rest of the force sense Keith's in danger and head to the lines to help him. Lotor calls on Urak to destroy the planet. And while their defenses are down, and then Urak can redeem himself. The lions arrive and can't believe what has happened to Urak. Princess knows there will be problems facing him. Urak pulls a bomb from his chest and throws it at the lions, blowing them in all different directions. While Princess and Blue Lion go to find Keith, since they know they'll need him, the other three face Urak. Lotor returns to make sure Keith is truly finished and fires on Keith as he awakens, but Blue Lion fires return shots towards Lotor's ship. Princess asks Keith if he's all right. He says yes. They need him right away in Black Lion, and he makes his way towards the castle using his white stallion.
Because that's faster than riding in a lion.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Why doesn't he just go in Blue Lion? That would make more sense, but Blue Lion needs to really get back to the battle with Urak, so he takes the horse. And Giant Urak tells the Voltron Force to surrender. Princess tells him he'll have to defeat each one of them before it's over. Well, he fires laser bullets from his fingers, then a couple rockets from his arms, and finally chains from his chest. The chains wrap around each of the four lions. Urak pulls on all four chains at once and twirls the lions around like a lasso, and then sends them slamming against the land. Well, at the castle, Keith has arrived and says he has to get to his lion. Nanny says he needs rest, he's too weak. Keith says they need Voltron to defeat Urak, and she wishes him good luck. In Black Lion, Keith looks for the other lions. He sees Urak first and slams into his back, knocking down Urak. He finds the other lions, They welcome him back and they form Voltron. Urak's first shot is a ray from both of his pointy ears, which Voltron blocks. Voltron counters with a spinning shield and cuts off both of Urak's ears. Then Voltron uses heat beams from the lion's mouth, then proton missiles. Then Voltron forms Blazing Sword, runs toward Urak, slicing him down the middle, which ends in an agonizing explosion, spelling the end for Urak.
Yeah, that was a little uncomfortable to watch because, you know, most of the time you slice a Robeast in half or however Voltron does it, and they just stand there looking pretty much the way they did, and then they blow up. And Urak got hit, he got split, and went into this, like, spasm of pain, I would say, because, like, you're looking at him from behind, and he goes up on his toes and, like, stiffens up, and I was thinking, ugh.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
That was gruesome.
Yeah. So Lotor ends up leaving, claiming Voltron has won this battle, but he will return to destroy Voltron and Olivares. That episode right there, I think, really introduced us, you know, not only to Prince Lotor, but it brings on a sort of a new chapter for the Drools on Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Lotor is now the commander-in-chief of the army.
Yeah, and that was exactly the same in the Golion thing. She shows back up, and I was sort of wondering why Zarkon would be so fast to hand the reins over, so to speak. But I think the table full of heads sort of spoke for itself in the Golion episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, because those were actually the heads of all of the kings in the Great Goering Nebula.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, you know, Sinclair is, he says, look, I've just taken out like 8 or 9 kingdoms for you, Pops. And what, one robot's going to give you trouble?
Yeah. One thing that did end up happening is when Lotor first saw Princess Allura, it looked like he was taken a little bit back by her beauty.
Yes, yes. And as we'll see coming up, Lotor has a type.
Well, let's move on to Voltron episode 15 called Give Me Your Princess, and the Golion version is called Overcome the Phantom of Shirogane.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
All right, so at the beginning of the episode, Lotor is addressing his new troops. From now on, you have one mission: to stop Voltron. Stop Voltron. Lotor thinks to himself, when Voltron is finished, the princess will be mine. So here we are. He's talking to his troops and saying, you've got to stop Voltron. You've got to stop Voltron. And in his own mind, he's thinking, I've got to get the princess for myself. He's got his own mind made up about what he wants to do, and it sort of goes against what is for the Drool Empire.
Well, Lotor seems to have some really conflicting emotions and intentions toward Allura, or Princess Fala, as she's called in Golion, because, like, half the time he's saying her beauty is this amazing thing, and I'm going to make her my wife, and I can't wait to make her mine. And then the rest of the time he's trying to kill her.
Yeah.
You know, he's shooting at her when she's in a lion. He's shooting at her when she's on a bridge.
Yeah.
That's coming up.
Yeah. But, he definitely wants the princess. That's for sure. But, you know, sometimes he has to show that he's still in charge of this whole army.
Right.
Well, on Arrus, as a result of the risk that Keith took by taking on Lotor himself and leaving Black Lion without a pilot, it seems like Allura got it in her mind that there may be a time when Black Lion won't have a pilot, or you know what happens if Keith goes back to Earth or something like that. But she takes it upon herself to sneak around because she wants to learn how to pilot Black Lion. so she can form Voltron should she ever need to if Keith's out of it again. And as the ruler of Arras, it's her job to protect her people. So as she gets to the line, the rest of the force head to the control room, where Karan tells them that they've scanned an enemy attack ship. They get ready to go and find out Allura is in Black Lion. The rest of the team say she's in the wrong Lion and to get back into the Blue Lion. Karan says there's no time. Princess says, "You think just because I'm a girl, you think I can't lead? I'll show you." And then Pitch says, "So that's it. She wants to be the leader." Keith says, "Well, we'll settle this later. For now, I'll fly the Blue Lion." So we've got our first, you know, inner team argument, basically.
Mm-hmm.
This hasn't happened before, so they don't understand why she's doing it. And she thinks it's perfectly natural, and she can't describe to them exactly why she's doing it, but Keith doesn't care at this point. There's trouble. Lotor is on his way to the to Arras, and as he's on his way, he's thinking to himself, and he claims that there's no other in the universe as beautiful as Princess Allura. I, Lotor, will soon have her. He tells his troops to proceed with the attack. The ships all land, and they spike themselves in the ground around the castle. From each of those ships, hundreds of fighters emerge to attack the castle. The force go to their lions and launch. Allura tells the others to follow her in Black Lion, and Keith says, "We're with you, Princess." And she goes to launch missiles on Black Lion, and it doesn't work. Keith asks what's wrong. Princess says, "All the controls are jammed." Pitch says, "Don't panic. Try the gyro override." Princess sees Lotor's ships coming, so Keith says they need Voltron. Lotor sees they are trying to form Voltron and zaps Black Lion with an electric ray. She passes out and Black Lion falls to the ground. Lotor tells his troops they've knocked out Black Lion. All units capture the Blue Lion because he wants to capture the princess. So at this point, he doesn't know that the princess is in Black Lion.
Right.
Is this still pretty much the same in Go Lion?
Yeah. I was surprised that the reaction of the team was actually a little harsher, I thought, in the Voltron episode toward Allura trying to learn to fly the Black Lion than it was in the Go Lion.
Wow.
And, you know, most of the time, you can count on the Japanese version of one of these cartoons to be a good bit harsher in most respects than the American or the Americanized version. But, yeah, I thought the team was, they were slightly bigger jerks toward her in the Voltron episode.
Yeah. Keith's in the Blue Lion, and as they go after the Blue Lion, Keith's avoiding their blasts. He shoots water all over Lotor's ship, and Lotor says, "Oh, the princess fights like a lion." Blue Lion then jumps on the wing of Lotor's ship and tries to rip it off with his jaws. Lotor thinks that can't be the princess piloting the Blue Lion. With his ship damaged, he returns to his command ship, but claims he'll be back soon.
Yet again, some casual sexism here.
What happens? I mean,
it's the same in both episodes, but it's just as sexist in both episodes because Lotor doesn't know the princess. He doesn't know what training she's had or what she's capable of.
Right.
And, you know, he gets attacked by the Blue Lion, who proceeds to begin to rip his ship apart. And his first reaction is, "Oh, that can't be the princess."
Right.
Well, why not? Why couldn't that have been the princess? But, you know, this is a slightly less enlightened time, I guess, when these shows were made.
Yeah. And here's another strange thing that happens. He goes back to his command ship and says he'll be back soon. Karan says they survived the first battle, but it's not over. Here we have, for the first time, they're still right outside of the castle.
Right.
But there's a lull in the battle.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a halftime.
Well, Rybel says one line in the Go Lion episode. It's something like, "Okay, we've got our self-defenses in place." And it was like the implication was that all during the battle, they were trying to get some sort of self-defense measure in place. We don't see what it is. They don't tell us what it is. He just mentions that, okay, it's in place. And I guess that's like, that's what gives them this little halftime here.
Is that why the lights were blinking on the screen? I guess. Parts of the castle?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, Lotor's returning to his throne room in his command ship, where there's dancing girls and wine. And he will he claims the princess will soon be his. She shall dance for my pleasure and serve me when I call. Her kingdom shall be my slave dungeon. You'll see, I'll destroy the Voltron force and capture the princess. Nothing can stop me. He has a plan that he believes will not fail. And I'm not sure who he's talking to here. He just seems like he's monologuing.
Yeah, he is monologuing. And I could tell there was going to be something bad coming, because during that monologue, all of a sudden, he's putting his sword back in the sheath. And sure enough, in the Go Lion episode, one of the girls, one of the servants who's pouring him a cup of wine, she's probably terrified of this guy. And she slips and spills some on his leg. And he draws his sword, and then he's down one slave girl.
Wow.
Yeah, just lays her right out, right there on the floor of the room.
Oh, man.
And the rest of the girls keep dancing. So that lets you know that, you know, they know what would happen if they stopped.
Right. Well, meanwhile, in the castle, all five Voltron Force members are walking down the hall in front of Princess Allura. And she says, please don't be angry, forgive me. And the others are ignoring her. At this point, Karan lectures, the Voltron Force is a team. Like a chain, it is only as strong as its weakest link. Pidge says it was all the princess's fault. Karan says, Princess earned the place to fly Blue Lion, but he's not sure she deserves that privilege now.
Yeah, that's that scene in particular, the Voltron team is a good bit harsher, because it's not so much that they're talking about whether she has the right to pilot the Blue Lion or not. It's more about, Shirogane wouldn't have done that. Shirogane wouldn't have got himself in that situation. And Allura, or Fala, says, oh, I understand. I'm not ever going to be as good as Shirogane. And she leaves. But then you get a little bit of Kogane, Keith's internal thoughts. And he actually says to himself, no, Princess, I want you to be as good as Shirogane. I want you to be better than he ever was. And that's a good bit more supportive than the Voltron team is toward her.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't like what Karan said.
Privilege? Do you call it a privilege to defend one's world from evil?
But you had no right to take the Black Lion.
I just wanted to help.
You could help a lot more if you would do just what you're supposed to. We don't need surprises.
We get enough surprises from Zarkon and Lotor.
Your friends are angry, and they have the right. Princess, you must realize the Black Lion is only for the commander of the Voltron Force.
Keith, I only wanted to learn in case someday you return to Earth and I was left on my own. Keith, say something.
Good intentions or not, you almost cost us our lives. Sven never would have done that.
So that's it. You think I'm not as good as Sven. I've failed.
The camera closes up on Princess Allura's face like three times in a row to show the princess came to a realization at that moment. I mean, it was just, wow. You know, her face, just the look of shock.
So one of those stylized techniques that the Japanese shows sort of pioneered and do really well.
Yeah, and her response to this is she runs to her bedroom and cries with the space mice and nanny there. Nanny thinks it's about the Voltron Force, and she remarks again about how her place is in the castle. That doesn't help. Princess just wants to be left alone. So, as Keith tries to figure out what Lotor is up to in the control room, Princess walks back toward the control room to see if anyone will let her know if she still deserves to fly the Blue Lion. And Keith thinks to himself that maybe he was a little rough on her. And outside, it's nighttime, and Lotor knows he can't destroy the castle if he wants to capture the princess. He's looking for a way to get in and find her when his father calls him. Zarkon says, "Have you destroyed Voltron yet?" Lotor says, "Very soon, sire." Hagar says, "He sounds more interested in the princess." Zarkon can't argue. She'd make a quite a bride. "Then we agree. The destruction of Voltron will be Zarkon's glory, and the princess shall be Lotor's. Next time we speak, it shall be done. You have my promise, sire." It looks like him and his father have an agreement here that Zarkon's going to get all the credit for destroying Eris, and he's going to get the princess out of the deal.
Right. So I got a little distracted because I'm looking at the Go Lion episode.
Yeah.
As we're talking, and right after that effect that you were talking about, where it goes into like this blue and black color scheme and zooms in on her face three times.
Right.
Her line right after that is, and she doesn't mean this, but she's upset, and she says, "I'm not as good as Shirogane after all. I'm just a woman after all."
Wow.
So there's a little bit, another extra layer there, aside from just not feeling like she fits in on the team. I think there's some gender-based insecurity.
Well,
not insecurity, but gender-based concern. You know, because I think she's thinking that they don't think she's capable of taking Sven's place because she's a woman.
Right. And it's affecting her dreams, too. Because as she's lying in bed, asleep, she's having a nightmare that Sven is piloting Blue Lion and no one will forgive her.
Right.
And she realizes that she let all of her friends down. She admits she was wrong. She has no right to be a part of the Voltron's force, and the space mice are there trying to cheer her up. Well, she overhears the others talking and makes up her mind that maybe Lotor will spare the others if she just gives herself up to him. So after she leaves the castle, the four remaining members ask Karan if he sent her away. Karan says this is her own decision. She's sacrificing herself to save her own world. Keith says we have to get her back before it's too late. So the team go to their lions, and they follow in the water. The princess in the Blue Lion shows up at Lotor's door, crashing in. Lotor orders his troops to capture the lion, which shows four claws grabbing each of the lion's legs. And then they send a shock through the lion and the princess, and she falls from the lion on the floor. Lotor says that she was foolish to come there. "Your new place will be to serve me day and night." As Lotor goes to pick her up, he says, "Mine at last," and she opens her eyes and slaps him. Lotor says, "You'll pay for that." So the princess offers Lotor a deal. If he spares planet Eris, she'll stay and serve him well. Lotor's troops let him know the Voltron force is approaching, and Lotor thinks they try to rescue her and he'll destroy them. Keith thinks they're too late. Lotor's got her. Princess says, "Don't worry about me, save yourselves." Pitch claims even Voltron would have a tough time getting the princess back at this point. Lotor says, "Give me the secret of Voltron and no harm will come to the princess." Well, at this point, they all leave their lions and walk toward Lotor. Lotor asks for the keys to the lions and Keith shows them to Lotor. At that point, Karan launches smokescreen missiles from the castle. And this causes a fog over the entire area. And in the haze, Keith tries to rescue Princess Allura, but Lotor swings at Keith with his laser sword. He gets Keith's shoulder. The princess runs, but the guards block her. Keith shoots them. She runs for Blue Lion and gets away.
You know, one thing that I don't know if it's like catering to the more American sensibilities or what, but... when they're out of the lions and walking up to Lotor, in the Voltron episode, Karan is, I think he's talking to Nanny, and she says something like, they'll be killed, and he says, no, we got a plan. We got a plan.
Right.
They didn't have a plan in Go Lion.
They didn't have one?
No, they got out of the lions, and they were like, well, I think we're kind of sunk here, guys. And there's debate in the team. We can't hand over Go Lion to this creep. Well, if we don't, they're going to kill her. Well, that sucks, but we can't let her be killed. So they're beaten. I mean, they're about to give Sin Klein what he wants. And it's Karan who comes in and saves the day there, because he does launch the smokescreen missiles, but it's not because they had some sort of coordinated thing going on. Karan just comes in and saves all their hides.
So what you're saying is that in the Japanese version, they were ready to sacrifice everything for the princess.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, Keith and the others get to their lions and take off. And Lotor runs back and uses his secret laser ray on Black Lion, which causes Blue Lion to cut into Lotor's ship. The team then forms Voltron. They cut into Lotor's laser ray in one swipe. And the rest of the team bring the injured Keith back to the castle, and Karan and Nanny are glad that they're back safe.
I'm so sorry for causing you all this trouble. I have no right to pilot any of the lions anymore.
Are you kidding? You are the Blue Lion, and someday you'll be the Black Lion, too.
You came through when we needed you, partner.
What you did out there today, protecting your friends and subjects, was one of the bravest things I've ever seen anybody do.
And I have to ask you a favor. Never, ever doubt that we always want you on our team.
I feel so happy. So why am I crying? When you have good friends, the world is a much nicer place to live. Having good friends on your team is the best thing in the whole universe.
So that whole sequence there at the end kind of ended pretty abruptly.
Yeah, and it's pretty much the same in Go Lion, right down to Keith. They're bringing him in, and he's just gotten hit in the back with a laser sword. And they bring him in, and says, Nanny says, "Oh, we have to get you fixed up." And he shrugs off the people next to him and says, "No, it's just a scratch." Because he's tough like that.
It's just a flesh wound.
And I don't remember if it goes into it in the Voltron episode, but at the end there, Keith turns to, or Kogane turns to Fala and says, you do have a place piloting the Black Lion, and someday, the Blue Lion, and someday the Black Lion too.
Yeah, that's kind of strange, isn't it?
Because what you did out there today, not even Shiragane could have pulled that off.
Wow.
So I think he does agree with her that, if something did happen to them, or if they did head back to Earth, it would be appropriate for her to be the leader of the team.
Wow.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
All right, well, moving on to episode 16. In the Voltron, it's called Bridge Over the River Chasarai. In the Go Lion, it's called The Legendary Bridge of Love. The episode starts off with Princess Alora thanking the Voltron Force for bringing Aris back from ruin and more towards a peaceful and fully functioning world again. As an example, she shows them a bridge that was restored to bring together the two kingdoms of Altair and Helena. But it has an even deeper meaning for all the people of Aris. One of their most cherished legends is the story of the Love Bridge, which is said to have existed in that very same spot. So I'll let Princess Alora tell the story.
One of our most famous legends is the beautiful story of the Love Bridge, which is said to have existed right in that very same place. It is told that many, many years ago, there was a young girl from the Kingdom of Altair who was very much in love. The object of her devotion was a young man who lived in the kingdom of Helena far across a broad inlet.
Here, my dearest one.
Aldar, my love.
But because the kingdoms of Altair and Helena were continually at war, the two could never be together. All the bridges between their lands had been destroyed. But they didn't give up hope. Their love was much stronger than the petty problems between their kingdoms. And so, to be together, they began to build their own bridge, stone by stone. Threw stones into the sea to build a bridge between them. No matter how many stones they threw, the task seemed impossible. Then one day, something very special happened. The goddess of love decided to help them. So to bring them together, she created a magical bridge from the water.
Here, we're together at last, to love forever.
Oh.
So Keith tells Alora it's a great story, and he knows why they've rebuilt that bridge so quickly. And a dedication to the bridge, Alora is going to help them reenact the story by playing the part of the young girl. Hunk and Pidge think the bridge and the story behind it are both beautiful. Lance agrees, saying he wouldn't want to miss Alora running from one side of the bridge and meeting the young guy in the middle, getting all icky and sticky. He wonders who gets to be the young guy. So Lance says icky and sticky, and he really says that.
Well, you know, one thing about the storytelling in this episode that it makes me wonder why they made this decision. In the Voltron episode, we open with Alora and the guy sitting around, and she's telling them about this, and she hits a button and a monitor comes up, and then you get to see the scene, sort of the legendary scene of the two lovers separated by the chasm, the inlet. The yeah. Go Line episode opens with that. Like, that's the first thing you see. Is these two young people in love and unable to get to each other, and it goes into the whole there's narration, like a male narrator, as they try to get to each other, and then the goddess of love constructs the miracle bridge.
So, and which one did you like better?
Well, it's the same thing as far as the actual sequence, but. I mean, I don't know that either one is better than the other, but it made me wonder why they decided not to have the show open with that for the American version. Like, did they think people would think they were watching the wrong cartoon?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking in order to keep the continuity going between all the other episodes,
mm-hmm.
they wanted people to know as soon as the show opens, okay, we're talking about the Voltron Force here.
It's like you've got to open on the Castle of Lions or Castle Doom, one or the other.
I mean, but if we start showing characters that have nothing to do with the regular show, then, you know, people might get confused. So I don't know.
I don't know. I think I prefer the Go Lion sequence a little better, just because I don't think people would have gotten confused. I think that's a huge stumbling block that a lot of people have about cartoons and shows that are nominally aimed at children.
Right.
Although I don't know if Go Lion was aimed at children, considering rafts of severed heads. But I think a lot of shows make the mistake of underestimating kids.
Yeah.
Kids are smart.
I think so, too. I mean, you start watching the show because that's the slot that Voltron's supposed to be playing.
Right.
So, yeah, if you go a little bit outside of the normal frame of perspective of the show, I think that makes it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So Lance is talking about getting all icky and sticky, and he wants to know who's going to be the young guy that portrays the male part. So Allura tells him it's going to be one of you four. Lance says, I know you want someone real macho, so it should be me. And then Hunk says, you need a big, strong fellow with bulging muscles who's all heart. Pitch says, how about someone loaded with personality? And Allura asks Keith, and he says, no thanks. I'll stay here in case of an emergency. So Lance says he has an idea about how she can pick. We could fight for it. Well, Pidge pulls out a deck of cards, and he says, better idea. Pick the Joker, and you win. So the princess pulls two aces and a Joker out of the deck and holds them up so the others can't see which card is which. Then Pidge makes a deal with one of the mice, and the mouse ends up picking the wrong one.
Yeah, pretty deliberately, too, I'd say.
Yeah.
Because that whole sequence is exactly the same from the Golion to the Voltron. Except in the Golion, he offers the mouse more cheese, which is immaterial. But yeah, the whole scene is just the mouse is just screwing with Pidge.
Well, I think it goes to show that Pidge is willing to cheat to win.
Right.
Well, Hunk is the one that ends up pulling the Joker. So he's really excited. He can't believe he gets to be romantic with the princess. So later on, the princess is showing off her outfit as the young girl from the Love Bridge story, and everyone loves it, and she even blushes a little. Karan reminds Hunk he must protect the princess at all times. Now, Hunk thinks it's like a dream, just him and the princess together. Nanny's going, too, to protect them both. Hunk and Allura take off into their lions, and Koba the cat watches from afar as they go. So Hagar's cat's there. Hagar says this will be the perfect time to capture Princess Allura. The Voltron force is separated. We must strike now. On Doom, while Zarkon watches robot gladiators fighting, trying to determine the next Robeast champion, Hagar tells Lotor it's time to put their plan in motion. Lotor should go to the Love Bridge on Eris. Zarkon says, bring the princess back. While the Voltron force searches for her, we'll attack the planet Eris. He tells Lotor to take his new Robeast in case he needs help.
You know, that scene makes a little bit more sense and is a good bit more violent in Golion when Diabazal and Sincline are watching the two Robeasts fight.
Do they actually show the battle?
Well, they don't show much more of the battle, but Zarkon has a line something like, never declare victory until it's clear you've won. I forget exactly what he says. But, you know, he says that and it cuts to the next scene. Well, in Golion, he says that, and he says that as the Robeast that has been knocked down is beginning to get back up. Zarkon pulls out a dagger, throws it, sticks it in the Robeast's neck, and kills it.
Wow.
So, I guess it's saying that if you get beaten, you might as well be dead as far as Zarkon is concerned.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sort of vaguely elephantine or elephantine. How do you say that word?
Elephantine?
How do you say that word? Elephantine?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
That's one of those words that I've read all my life and never heard anyone actually say out loud. I guess I could have looked it up and actually looked at the phonetic pronunciation, but I'm right. Lazy. But yeah, the Robeast that wins in the arena there is clearly the one that gets modified into the interesting configuration that we see later in the episode.
Right. So Lotor's on his way to Eris, and he's thinking to himself that he has a great plan to make Allura his wife, and they will rule Eris together as king and queen. And at the bridge ceremony, there are hundreds there. And Allura recalls the story that brought Altair and Helena together as the people still cheer. This is the thing. She's talking. And they're still all cheering wildly and loudly. I think the respect would be to let her talk and not cheer over her.
Well, you know, one other thing that I was puzzled about in this episode is the Castle of Lions. Does it just like shift position? Does it like pick itself up and put itself down in different places?
Yeah, because typically it had a moat around it, sort of like the water was all surrounding it.
Yeah,
and this time we saw it like it was on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, it's on this big rock outcropping.
Yeah, that was kind of strange.
Continuity.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there.
Right. Well, it is her hope that this bridge will be a bridge of hope for all people forever. So as the ceremony begins, Hunk, dressed in an old Roman-style tunic, waits on the other side. They run towards each other to the center of the bridge, when all of a sudden out of the water emerges Lotor's ship.
I hate to interrupt such a tender and touching scene, Princess, but you should be rushing to my arms.
He shoots down the bridge from the one end, and as the destroyed bridge falls into the water, Hunk and Alora cling to a piece of the bridge that's still above the water.
You should be running into my arms, Princess. Now let me shoot a lot of high-powered ordnance at you.
Yeah, but he has to go physically get her himself, right?
Right, yeah.
So he has to jump from the cockpit of his ship and onto the piece of the bridge where the princess is. She asks what he's doing there, and he says he's there to discuss plans for her future, and he walks towards her. The rest of the team, they see she's in danger from the control room, and they all head to the Lions.
In the most leisurely way possible. Yeah, and it's the same way in both versions of the episode. They're like, oh, hey, look, there's Syncline. Or Lotor, and he's on the bridge and with Allura. Hey, maybe we should do something about that.
Yeah.
This was, and like, Rybel says, this was such a happy day too. You should hurry. Like, all right. Okay. I guess we can go get in the Lions and go give her a hand.
Well, they did have Hunk there as the bodyguard, right?
Well, yes.
Right.
That's true.
So as they approach the area, they see Zarkon's Robeast. And it's called the Trunk Tank Robeast, and I got that directly from the book. I want you to know.
and appropriately so.
And it's one of the few Robeasts that doesn't have legs. So Lotor says to the princess, why don't you rush to my arms? And then Hunk gives him a flying kick. And he says, you dare challenge me? As Lotor comes at him with a sword, Hunk ducks but slips and is barely holding on from falling. The princess stops him from going after Hunk and he knocks her into the water. So Lotor gets back in his ship and the princess is swimming for shore. As Lotor bears down on her, Yellow Lion gets in front. Yep, Hunk has gone back to his lion, and he's got Nanny in Yellow Lion's cockpit. So Lotor fires on Yellow Lion and knocks him down in the water close to the one shore. Alora swims towards them. Meanwhile, the Robeast is shooting lasers at the other three lions in the air above the castle. Karan tells them to defend the castle. Two energy bolts from the Robeast temporarily disable the green and black line, so Lance goes after it. A bat flies from the Robeast and knocks Red Lion down.
Oh, I'm afraid that's not a bat.
What is it?
That's his ears.
That's his ears?
I think that's his ears. That's his big elephant ears. Those were the things that look like wings.
All right. It looked like a bat, didn't it?
It did. It did, but I think that was his ears coming off his head and going and kicking butt.
Okay.
And let me tell you, the princess, Michael Phelps has got nothing on her. This is one scene that I really, really liked with her because, you know who rescued her from the water? She did.
She did. That's right. And she's a pretty good swimmer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Robeast had temporarily disabled the green and black lion, and now the red lion was knocked down. The Robeast fires again at Green and Black Lion and sends them reeling. The princess makes it back to the others at the ceremony, and they tell her Nanny is in the Yellow Lion. She says she's got to help them and heads toward Blue Lion, but Lotor is waiting there for her. He says they need to talk about uniting their two planets, and Princess says that can never happen. She points a gun at him, and he says, "Would you shoot someone who wants to make you his wife?" So he grabs her, but only gets a shred of her clothing, and then she runs towards the Blue Lion. She turns around, and this time she points the gun at her head. She says, "You will never take me alive. Your father destroyed our planet once. That's enough." He claims he can help her make Aris strong again, and she doesn't believe him.
Yeah, that's... That version, what he says after she puts the gun to her head and says, "I'd rather die than be yours," I think this line from Sinclair really cements him as the kind of overprivileged, entitled creep that he is, because very sincerely he says, "Stop, I'm the one who chooses your death."
Okay.
"You're going to die, but it's going to be me who decides when."
Yeah. "First, I want you to serve me first."
Right, exactly.
Well, he's claiming that he can help make Aris strong again. She doesn't believe him. She says, "You'll make my people slaves." And as he moves towards her, he trips on a rock and gets shots fired at him by Alora around his feet. She gets in Blue Lion and tells Hunk and Nanny she's coming to help. She digs them out of the water and the rubble. And Hunk says something got knocked out on Yellow Lion's controls and it's not responding. Blue Lion gives a piggyback to Yellow Lion back to the castle. Well, Hunk tells Princess to push his lion into free fall, and then Keith calls for them to form Voltron, and they do. The Robeast fires on Voltron, nothing happens. Then Voltron forms Electro Saber. This is different than Blazing Sword. This is Electro Saber. And as the Robeast sends its ears, Voltron slices it in two. So and
after that, the Robeast can't hear anything.
Right.
which is a shame, because in the Go Lion version, the Blue Lion theme song is playing. There's an actual song with like lyrics and everything specifically for the Blue Lion.
Cool.
Yeah. It refers to boiling courage and rushing from the blue lake.
Well, that would have been cool if each lion had gotten their own theme in Voltron.
Well, there was another, I forget which one it was, but one of the other episodes, the Black Lion theme song was playing. So there might have been theme songs for each lion.
Wow. All right. So Voltron sliced the ears in two, and then Keith calls Ignite Lion Torch from Green Lion's mouth. They fire Stingray missiles from Blue and Yellow Lion's mouths from the feet. This knocks the Robeast to the ground, and as the Robeast fires missiles and lasers backtracking, he flies up as Voltron chases. The Robeast's hands fly out and grab Voltron's legs, taking him down. And then Keith says, "Increased deflector shield power." Hunk says, "Give it a fire volcano liftoff." Fire encircles the Robeast and sends it skyward. Then Voltron forms Blazing Sword, and as the Robeast falls back down, Voltron cuts it in half and explodes in a huge fireball. I mean, just a huge explosion.
You know, as goofy looking as this thing is, and as hard a time I have believing that it actually flew anywhere under its own power.
Right.
This was probably the toughest Robeast I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, it really gave Voltron a run for his money. It's the first time in the series that one of the lions gets damaged, badly enough to need repairs.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're at the castle at the end, and Yellow Lion is in for repairs, and Karan promises it'll be fixed shortly, but it's the first time any part of Voltron was in the sick bay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
I mean, I liked the idea that, in fact, I think Sincline at one point, it might have been somebody else, but one of the characters says, if they can't form Voltron, they're just machines.
Right.
And, you know, Voltron is pretty clearly, I would say, at least somewhat mystical in nature.
Sure.
But I like the vulnerability there.
Right.
You know, and I really, really liked the earlier scene, in one of the earlier episodes, when they repelled Urak's invasion force without forming Voltron.
Right.
Because, you know, if you can't accomplish anything with just the Lions, why even have the Lions? Why not just, you know, put Voltron together at the beginning of every fight?
Right.
So, yeah, that really gives the series, I think, I would say, a much needed and much appreciated dose of realism. And kind of reminds me of why I fell in love with this thing.
Yeah. And they're standing there in the sick bay watching Yellow Lion get fixed. And Hunk thinks maybe Princess should have enacted the story with Lotor, and maybe their two planets would be at peace. And the princess says, never. No one could ever love Lotor. Now, back on Doom, Lotor has to explain this to Zarkon. He claims he was cursed by bad luck. And Zarkon says, I don't want excuses, only victories. To control this universe, we must destroy Aris. Lotor says he understands, and he's going to develop a new plan that can't possibly fail. So that's the end of our episodes.
Well, there's a little extra bit.
Oh, there is?
From, it's just dialogue, but when Lotor is back on Doom explaining what happened to his dad, he's reiterating that he does intend to take Allura and make her part of his collection. And he's very clear on that. He's not saying this is my one and only. He's just saying I've got to have her. And Zarkon, or Daibazal, says, you will be the one who takes the head of Altea's princess. Then the two of us will drink of her blood through the night. And Lotor protests. He says, she's for my collection. And Daibazal says, I will not allow some traitorous princess to kneel before me.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some serious tension between father and son there, because Lotor, whatever his motives are, wants Allura alive.
Yeah.
And Zarkon does not.
Yep. And this is going to be something that continuously causes the Doom to fail against the Voltron Force, because he's always trying to capture her, and if he would just go after them, he would probably defeat them.
Yeah, it seems like the whole, the solution from the movie Aliens, nuke the site from orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they could get a lot of mileage out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody on Eris ever knows when spaceships are showing up.
The planetary defense system doesn't stop anybody from getting on the planet.
No, they find out they've been invaded once the invaders are on the ground.
Yeah.
I really like the, and even though they're not human, they're human motivations. You know, I think that's one of the things that appealed to me to begin with about this whole endeavor is the characters. And that's actually, like, as a writer, that's a realization that I came to later in my career than I should have, and is that especially in anything serialized, cartoon, anything on TV, a series of novels, the plot is important, but it is nowhere near as important as the characters.
Right.
And this is the kind of thing that, even though this guy is a pointy-eared, lavender-skinned creep, he doesn't get along with his dad.
Right.
And, you know, how many of us have been able to say, Dad and I don't really see eye to eye?
Yeah.
So this is part of what was great about this show, about any good show, is that as alien as they are, you can see a little bit of yourself in these people.
Well, the other thing is that leading up to this, it didn't seem like there was ever any talk of peace or anything that was ever going to happen between these two worlds. And here you have the son of the leader of the other world talking about it.
Yeah, and even though he doesn't want to achieve it in a good way, he seems to think that if he can force Allura to marry him, that he will automatically become king of Eris, or at least of her kingdom there, and everyone will accept that.
Right. I mean, it's sort of like a fantasy of his that they could be king and queen of Eris together, and of course she's going to be delighted with this. And
yeah, and he'll bring his harem along with him.
Right, and that he would rule that planet, and Doom would be okay with that.
Right.
I don't know where he's getting that idea from. But
he's thinking with his hormones.
Yeah. But I mean, he was completely infatuated with her ever since he first saw her.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a continuous theme throughout the whole show.
Right.
So this is good. I'm glad we've gotten through these episodes, because this is the Lotor era.
Yep.
And Urak is gone.
Oh, he'll be missed. he won't really.
Should we say a few words for Urak?
Nice ears, dude.
You almost sounded like Zarkon. How about that?
You mean Urak did, or I did?
No, Urak did. His voice was similar to Zarkon.
Yeah. It was the same actor, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Angel. So that was cool. And I want to thank you once again for joining me to talk about these episodes.
Hey, it's been my pleasure.
And we'll be doing this again somewhere down the line here. We'll have other episodes that we do some other things first, but we'll come back and we'll get back to episodes 17, 18, 19, and 20.
Cool.
So until next time, thank you for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And until next time,
Let's Voltron!